This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Add KPFT as a friend. It's fun, so catch up with KPFT online. Again, on MySpace, visit myspace.com/KPFT Houston. On Facebook, visit us at facebook.com/KPFT Houston. This is commercial-free, listener-sponsored Pacifica Radio and KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Valinsky.
And Jennifer Renee.
Brian Levinka.
Summer Iman.
And Glenn Holt. And leading off the show this evening, we're going to be talking with somebody that the Summer has lined up about the Art Car Parade, which is coming up. And Dan Aykroyd is going to be the leader, I guess, of the Art Car Parade.
Master of Ceremonies, I think.
And I finally found somebody to ask, because I've seen it before, and I've seen the cars, and what is it? What's the purpose? We'll find out what the purpose is. It's a big festival of silliness.
Stay tuned and find out.
And that's silliness, right? Of cars.
Mm-hmm. It's what makes Houston unique and fun.
And Jack, what else we got?
Well, we're also going to be talking to John Wright of the Dallas Voice. And the Dallas Voice is a GLBT newspaper in Dallas, which is an incredible newspaper. And they do some very good stories about what's going on in Dallas, the state, and nationally. So we'll get a catch-up there. And then we're going to be doing an interview.
Then we have a focus on the Wonka party coming up on May 16th. It's a community fundraiser, dress-up, fun, craziness. It's the next big thing.
And then we're going to have at 10, we're going to have the GLBT Community Center. We're going to talk with Tim Brookover about their coming out group. And we'll have the facilitator here as well as Tim Brookover.
And then finally, we have Unhinged Productions' Uncivil Unions coming up in the last segment of the night. So stay tuned. And we're back. We had mentioned the Art Car Parade, and in the studio tonight we have Robert Manning, who is putting together an art car of his own.
Well,
welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure being here. Actually, I'm a member of the Houston Gulf Coast chapter of the Association of Nurses and AIDS Care, and this is the second time that we as a chapter have put together an art car.
Well, before we get into that, let's talk about the Art Car Parade. Summer, what is the Art Car Parade?
As Glenn said, it's a giant festival of silliness. It's basically people who want to either create a message or create a piece of art and be able to drive that around the city. And
it's like cars with like mirrors and like glued on toy soldiers and crazy stuff, I think.
Those are cars that are like beautifully modified. They look like a regular car, more or less, but they've had things done to them, such as like extensive hydraulics or other strange modifications, or the paint jobs are quite interesting sometimes also.
So, Robert, tell us how your car is an artful entry into the Art Car Parade.
Well, this year we wanted to do something with the concept of stigma and HIV. So our car is going to be covered with over 400 pointed fingers on magnets.
Pointed fingers pointing out?
Pointing out.
So kind of pointing the finger at you.
Yeah. And the title of the car is It's All About You.
I see.
Which is just kind of a play on words. You know, when you talk about stigma, it's not all about you. It's all about me. You know, it's all about the person. And taking responsibility.
Now, what inspired you to do a car on stigma and HIV? I mean,
well, I'm a nurse. I work at Thomas Street Health Center. I'm a nurse case manager. Mm-hmm. And I see how stigma adversely affects how patients seek treatment, mm-hmm. and how it delays them being diagnosed with HIV, and how it creates barriers when they're receiving care. You know, they oftentimes don't feel like they can talk to family members and people who could actually be providing support.
Absolutely. Here we are almost 30 years into the disease, and we still see that stigma every day.
Yeah, I get real tired of having to, you know, conceal the fact that I'm calling someone from an HIV clinic,
mm-hmm.
just to, because of that whole thing of stigma.
Absolutely. So it's an important thing.
This is the second time that you guys have done an ARCAR, though, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
The first one was a car that advocated safe sex, I believe?
Yeah, the first year we did it was the condom car, and it was my truck, and it had a large condom over the front of it, and we had the we had a huge condom in the back of the truck.
Very good. Now, when is the ARCAR parade?
The ARCAR parade is this Saturday, the 8th.
Okay, and it's along Allen Parkway, I believe?
Yes.
And it starts at 1 p.m.
Okay, so that and many other wonderful entries into the ARCAR parade. If you haven't been to the ARCAR parade, it's something that's very uniquely Houston and fun, and it's a great time and great weather. So please come out and support this event and check out the entry from the Association of Nurses in AIDS Care. Thank you very much, Robert.
Thank you.
Emmy Award-winning actor Dan Aykroyd will lead the way as the Grand Marshal of the 23rd Annual Houston Art Car Parade on Saturday, May 8th at 1 p.m. Close to 250 mobile masterpieces will travel along Allen Parkway, amazing and delighting spectators. The VIP party, the official party of the Houston Art Car Parade, offers the absolute best views, features a lunch from some of Houston's best restaurants, and even includes a visit from Grand Marshal Dan Aykroyd, making it the place to be on parade day. For tickets, call 713-926-6368 or visit orangeshow.org. You've been listening to 90.1 KPFT Houston.
This is Queer Voices.
Now, usually the first Monday, we have David Elliott on from Washington, but David somehow took off. I don't know where he is.
Well,
he took off.
He's MIA.
No, he didn't go to Arizona. But a very good...
Did he have his papers?
I don't know. But there's a lot of things going on, and John Wright is with us from the Dallas Voice. And, John, did you just get a promotion?
No, I got a transfer.
Oh, okay.
I became our online editor. We're getting ready to launch a new and improved website. And when we do that, we're really going to need someone maintaining it full time, because it's going to have a lot of different features. So
that's really interesting, because I have my Google Reader set up for lots of different feeds, and I get a lot of stuff from you all, and sometimes it's hard to keep up with everything.
Yeah, we've had a very active blog over the last couple of years, and we've really become a 24/7 news operation, despite the fact that the paper itself only comes out once a week. So more and more of the stuff is being reported online, and I think this change in position for me is a sign of that.
Well,
particularly breaking news, you know,
anything really
breaking is
I mean, you were covering some of the Dallas people up in Washington at a protest.
Yeah, and Dallas has had several people involved with Get Equal, which is, I'm sure you know, the direct action group that's staged a lot of these civil disobedience actions in the last few months. And, yeah, so by phone and by email and by Twitter and Facebook, we've managed to do that, and you know, I think we've been fairly successful.
Well, John, this is Jennifer. I had understood that the possibility maybe that this new online edition of the paper will also cover some of the goings-on in Houston.
Well, you know, that's one advantage to the online stuff is, you know, that you all can read it down there without actually having the physical paper delivered to you. So we're going to try. You know, we just don't. There's a couple things about that. One is that, you know, our existing staff here in Dallas really trying to focus on North Texas because that's the core of our readership, obviously. But the other thing is it's kind of difficult sometimes to cover stuff from afar, and we don't really have people on staff who are extremely knowledgeable of Houston LGBT stuff. But, you know, one of the things that we'd like to do as we move forward is to find some folks in Houston who are would be willing to cover stuff for our website, to blog for us and to do some reporting when there's stuff going on down there, which obviously there always is. But anyhow, that's we're right now we're just trying to get the new website up and running, and then we'll go from there. But I just figured I'd throw that out as a future possibility.
Well, that doesn't sound bad, the Houston Bureau of the Dallas Voice.
That would be great, you know.
You know, there's the bank, the Federal Reserve Bank. When they built it, they rebuilt a new building down here. It was the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas, Houston branch. And that didn't go over too well here, and they got rid of that sign. But, you know, the quality of your paper is really incredible. And I just want to, you know, it's nice to talk to you every once in a while to sort of give us an overview of what's going on in Dallas and in Texas that we may not be already catching all the time.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, why don't we go over some of the stories that have been hitting the news?
Yeah, what do you want to know about? I'll tell you what I know. May not be all that much, but you go ahead and shoot, or do you want me just to...
Why don't you go ahead?
Well, what do we got? We've had the big gay divorce case, obviously. Two cases now, actually, one in Dallas and one in Austin, both on appeal, having been appealed by Attorney General Greg Abbott, who doesn't think that same-sex couples should be allowed to divorce if they've been married in another state where it's legal, because, obviously, we have a constitutional amendment and a statute prohibiting same-sex marriage. Mm. So that's been a pretty interesting. We've gotten a lot of national attention for that, as I'm sure you've noticed. Newsweek and Time, and I think even CNN today, there was a story up. So it's put Texas on the map, so to speak. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. What else? And of course, we've had the more and more direct action civil disobedience going on, and people here in Dallas have been closely involved with that. We had a big march here, as I understand you did, on Saturday over immigration reform. We had several GLBT groups participating in that.
And were the GLBT groups welcomed in that?
As far as I know, you know, I was not actually there. David Taffet, our news reporter, was down there, and we have a very active, successful gay chapter of LULAC here in Dallas.
Really?
Really? That's interesting.
Yeah, they actually won National Chapter of the Year like 2 years ago, and this year they won District Chapter of the Year, and it's very popular, and their meetings are very well attended, and they're very active. And so I think my guess is that, yes, that they were welcomed there because there is that history there with a gay LULAC chapter.
That's incredible working of a coalescing with other groups.
Yeah, and Jesse Garcia, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that name. He's the president of that chapter, and he's, you know, worked extremely hard to try to build bridges between the GLBT and Latino communities here. And, part of the theory there anyway is that, we're never going to get anywhere on our own. We're going to need allies, and we've got to be there for them if we want them to be there for us. And so, you know, I hate to even make it sound like an us and them, because really we're all the same when it comes to discrimination. But they've been extremely successful, and a lot of the credit for that goes to Jesse Garcia.
Well, and especially since there's already been talk of doing an Arizona-type law here in Texas, although even Governor Perry sort of stepped away a little bit from it. But there was at least one representative, I think, from the Houston suburbs that said that she, I believe it was a she, that would like to sponsor that when the legislature goes back in session on January.
Yeah, that's right. That's I believe that's Debbie Riddle.
Yes, yes.
And the other guy was Burnham. I think, is it Burnham or Berman from East Texas? Both have come out and proposed that. You know, Debbie Riddle is the one who, during the hate crimes committee hearing last year, compared being gay or black or Latino to having red hair.
Okay.
She was objecting to the hate crimes legislation. It was a bill, actually, to add gender identity to our state hate crimes law. And she was objecting to hate crimes legislation in general. And her objection was, well, you know, what if somebody with red hair gets attacked or killed? Should we increase the sentence because they had red hair?
Right.
So that's Debbie Riddle.
An intellectual giant, huh?
Apparently so. And so it stands to reason that she would sponsor something like this. And then the other guy, Burnham, he's the one who last week said that Obama, this was at an appearance in East Texas with Obama and Rick Perry, of all people. With Glenn Beck and Rick Perry and this guy from Tyler. And he came out and said that Obama is God's punishment. That was his quote from that rally.
Well,
so those are the two people we're dealing with when it comes to
a spiritual giant.
And Rick Perry today said that the oil spill was God's, you know, was God did it.
God's punishment.
I'm sensing a theme here.
Yes. Now, wasn't there also a murder victim found outside of a gay bar in Fort Worth?
There was, but it was not outside of the gay bar per se. It was a couple of blocks away.
Okay.
And police have not established any link,
right? Okay.
As far as we know, between the bar, the Rainbow Lounge, which of course was the site of last June's raid, and this murder victim. And as a matter of fact, they were very upset that one of the TV stations had suggested that there was a link. And so they're obviously pretty sensitive about that whole thing.
Does the Dallas general mass media contact you all about any type of these when some of these news stories break?
Yeah, we do frequently get calls, either asking us for them to put them in touch with people who we know, or asking us to actually do interviews ourselves. And that was especially the case with a Rainbow Lounge raid last year. Several times when they contacted us, I guess they couldn't find anybody else, so they wanted to just come to our office and interview us, which is fine because it gets our name out there.
Sure, but on the other hand, they should have contacts in the GLBT community themselves.
They really should, and a lot of them do, but I guess sometimes they get a little desperate and frantic, and so they just call the newspaper. A gut reaction.
Yes, it's easier. It's easier.
Right.
So, okay, what are some of the other things going on?
Oh, let's see. Goodness, there's been so much. Trying to think. Obviously, we had the play over there in Stephenville. Did you all follow that?
Yes.
Thing with the Corpus Christi? Yeah, that's was really interesting because it was canceled, obviously. It was a student class project, for those who aren't familiar, was an excerpt. They were going to stage an excerpt from Terrence McNally's play, Corpus Christi, which is about a gay, Christ-like figure named Joshua. And, of course, the community there in Stephenville, which is southwest of Fort Worth, led by the local newspaper, strongly objected to this thing and started making threats toward the university and toward individuals. And so finally the university buckled and canceled it. Now the reason they gave when they did cancel it was safety and security. they pointed to these threats, et cetera, and said, we don't want anyone to get hurt. Well, turns out there may have been a little more to it than that. A note has turned up that, well, first of all, you had Lieutenant Governor David Dewhurst issuing press releases, hateful press releases during this time, saying the play should be canceled, and then after it was canceled, saying they made the right decision. So we have that connection right away. But then there's additional connections that tie Rick Perry to the whole thing. And as you know, the regents that oversee these universities are appointed
By Rick Perry, yes.
And so it's looking more and more like Rick Perry and David Dewhurst may directly have been responsible for cancellation of that play, which to me is just, you know, I mean, to go and meddle in a student class project at Tarleton State for our governor, to meddle in a student class project at Tarleton State University is just beyond my comprehension of what a governor should be doing.
Yes, and this is the same governor that wants to secede from the union.
And we should let him secede.
Yes.
The census, has that been a story up there concerning the GLBT community?
Yeah, there has been a big push, obviously, to fill it out and send it back. We had a representative here, and I think she was probably covered Houston
yes.
as well.
Yes.
Elizabeth Lopez Lyon.
Yes.
Directly responsible for outreach, and so yeah, it has. And I guess I don't know where are we at with the census. What's the
well? Basically, it's over by sending in your form. Now the enumerators are coming out.
That's right. And so now they got to come and knock on your door if you didn't send it back.
Yes, and it's my understanding that Texas did okay, although we could have done better. That we've had as many counted now that we did for the 2000 census, but we need to do that final, you know, 30-40% counting.
Yeah, and here's the thing about that is that is going to be so critical because now it's looking more and more like don't ask, don't tell. And ENDA are not going to pass this year. And I hate to say that, but that is the way it's looking. And so that pushes us, you know, a couple years down the road, and we have those census results, and we have probably three or four new seats in Congress from Texas. And it's, you know, so critical that those boundaries are drawn and that we get fair-minded folks in those seats in order so that we will have the votes to pass this critical federal legislation. So Texas is going to end up playing a big role when it comes to equality on a federal level is kind of what I'm getting at. And so that's why that just adds even more importance to the census.
Well, John, we really appreciate having you on tonight, and you'll need to let us know when you sort of do the revamping of the website so we can let our listeners know.
Absolutely, I will, and I really appreciate it, and anytime, thank you very much.
John Wright is with the Dallas Voice, and he is going to be managing their online presence, which has been pretty good so far, and we just look forward to it getting better. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Better than chocolate, better than a hug, better than kittens and other mushy stuff. It's better than ice cream on a July day, better than the Detroit Lions finally winning a game. I think you should know I'm talking about public radio. So send out some dough, public radio, because they give you great shows, public radio. Better than finding comfortable footwear, better than scratching and itch down there. Is better than bald guys suddenly growing hair. J-Lo and sexy underwear. Now you know I'm talking about public radio. This is what you hear. So let me make this clear. Public radio. Send off some dope. Public radio. Because they give you great shows. Public radio. Chance. I may be 52, but I look good in tight pants. But how would you know? It's radio.
Was Jamie Anderson and a song called Public Radio from a private release album called Better Than Chocolate from the year 2010. And now here is News Wrap.
I'm Sherry Lunn.
And I'm Michelle Pleasant.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending May 1st, 2010. A letter from U.S. Defense Secretary Robert Gates to House Armed Services Committee Chairman Ike Skelton late this week sparked angry responses from several LGBT advocacy groups. Gates warned in the letter, obtained by the Associated Press, that congressional repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell before military personnel are ready for it would be a mistake. Referring to the study he announced in February to be completed by December about how repeal would be implemented, Gates wrote that congressional action before year's end would send a very damaging message to our men and women in uniform that in essence their views, concerns, and perspectives do not matter. Skelton, a Missouri Democrat, has opposed repeal of the policy that requires lesbian and gay service members to stay closeted. Queer advocacy groups have recently stepped up their pressure on the Obama administration to fulfill the president's repeated promises to repeal the policy, most recently in his January State of the Union address. There's a particular sense of urgency because Democrats could lose a significant number of seats in both houses of Congress in the November midterm elections. But the White House distributed a media statement that read in part, "The implementation of any congressional repeal will be delayed until the DOD study of how best to implement that repeal is completed."
The LGBT military advocacy group Service Members Legal Defense Network sharply criticized that statement. "We have the votes in the House, and we're close to having the votes in the Senate Armed Services Committee," their statement said. The commander-in-chief sounds like he is deferring to his defense secretary and to a House chairman who opposes him on repeal. With all due respect to Secretary Gates, it is Congress that determines the legislative schedule, not the Secretary of Defense. Service Members United, a group of LGBT veterans, called the Gates letter significant cause for concern, writing that several points in this letter are patently offensive and false. Human Rights Campaign President Joe Solomnis wrote that failure to act this year will, without a doubt, continue to send the message to thousands of gay and lesbian Americans serving their country in silence that their views and concerns and the impact on them and their families do not matter to the military leadership, including their commander-in-chief. At the very least, many are urging the suspension of investigations and discharges under Don't Ask, Don't Tell in this year's Defense Authorization Bill, under which the original policy was enacted in 1993. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi issued a statement following the Gates letter urging the Obama administration to immediately place a moratorium on dismissals under this policy until the review has been completed and Congress has acted. In other U.S. news, a civil unions bill passed in the Hawaii State House on April 29th and moved to Republican Governor Linda Lingle, who has not said whether she will sign or veto it. The unexpected vote on the bill on the last day of the year's legislative session came through a motion by Democratic House Majority Leader Blake Oshiro after other business was completed. The Hawaii Senate passed the measure in January. The House vote fell 3 votes short, however, of the two-thirds majority that would be needed to override a gubernatorial veto. Religious-based conservative groups in the state vowed to flood Lingle's office with telephone and email messages, urging her to reject the bill and to punish pro-civil union lawmakers at the polls in November. Evan Wolfson, executive director of Freedom to Marry, served as co-counsel in the 1993 Bear v. Maiki Hawaii Supreme Court ruling calling for the legal recognition of same-gender couples. That case has been credited with sparking the U.S. marriage equality movement. Hawaii voters approved a constitutional amendment in 1998, giving the legislature the power to ban same-gender marriage. Wolfson issued a statement applauding the Aloha State Civil Unions Bill as a major step forward, but noted that the experience of other states, such as Vermont, Connecticut, New Hampshire, and New Jersey, as well as several countries, has been that civil unions are no substitute for marriage. I urge Governor Lingle to swiftly sign House Bill 444 into law, and to Hawaii continuing its journey and finishing the job by ending the denial of marriage. U.S. District Court Judge Vaughn Walker this week scheduled June 16th for closing arguments in the closely followed federal constitutional challenge to California's marriage equality banning, Proposition 8. The presentation of evidence in the trial wrapped up in late January, but Walker said he wanted some time to review all the testimony before he heard closing arguments. Proceedings had also been delayed because of a third-party fight between the court and two groups involved in the No on 8 fight, Equality California and the American Civil Liberties Union, over the disclosure of internal documents related to the 2008 campaign. Both organizations agreed earlier this week to disclose the documents. LGBT groups joined other civil rights advocates to condemn a measure passed in the Republican-controlled Arizona legislature and signed by Republican Governor Jan Brewer this week that requires law enforcement officials to demand identification documents from anyone they have reasonable suspicion may be in the country illegally. Immigration Equality Executive Director Rachel Tiven wrote that the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender community knows all too well how easily people who look different can be singled out for harassment and prosecution. 40% of LGBT binational couples in the United States include a Latino family member, she noted. For them and their loved ones, Arizona is now the most dangerous place in America. The National Gay and Lesbian Task Force condemned the law as draconian and inhumane. A statement by Lambda Legal said that LGBT undocumented immigrants are among the most invisible of the invisible. It called the Arizona law shameful and urged Congress to enact comprehensive immigration reform that provides decent and fair treatment for all immigrants, including those who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, or transgender, or who are living with HIV. And newly out singer Ricky Martin told the live and television audiences during the Billboard Latin Music Awards in San Juan, Puerto Rico, that the law makes no sense. Making his first post-closet public appearance, Martin received a standing ovation as he walked on stage. "This is not in the script," he said. "Stop discrimination. Stop hate. Stop racism. Enough already. Long live love. Long live peace." Elsewhere, another Turkish LGBT activist group has won the right to exist. In his ruling in the western city of Izmir this week, rejecting local efforts to shut down the group Black Pink Triangle, Judge Mersel Ermis wrote that homosexuals are free to found associations like all other people. Citing the Anatolia news agency, Agence France-Presse reported that the Izmir governor's office wanted the group shut down because it was in breach of Turkish family structure and general morality. Similar arguments were used in failed efforts last year to dissolve Lambda Istanbul, and in 2005 to outlaw the Ankara-based Chaos GL. Consensual, private, adult, same-gender sex is not against the law in EU-hopeful Turkey, as it is in other predominantly Muslim nations. However, there are no laws to protect sexual minorities from discrimination or abuse, and entrenched prejudice dominates Turkish society. As we reported last week, Children and Families Minister Aliya Kavaf prompted recent protests for calling gay people a biological disorder.
As we also reported last week, Bolivian President Evo Morales created his own controversy with comments at a regional climate change conference that eating female hormone-injected chicken made men gay. When men eat it, they tend to deviate from their manhood, said Morales, who also linked the diet to baldness in European men. Those remarks sparked outrage by LGBT advocacy groups in Argentina and Brazil and prompted the Spanish Federation of Lesbians, Gays, Bisexuals, and Transsexuals to promise a protest demonstration at the Bolivian embassy in Madrid. Their statement demanded an immediate public retraction of these most absurd and unscientific statements. The UK's Guardian newspaper also pointed out that chicken producers in Europe, the US, and many other countries abandoned the use of hormones in poultry several decades ago. According to Merco Press, Morales sent a letter to the Spanish group this week expressing respect for diversity. The report quoted his spokesman, Ivan Canellas, that under no way did it ever cross the mind of President Morales to attack the rights of homosexuals. Canellas blamed the uproar on an inadequate misinterpretation of what was said.
And finally, as reported by the Adelaide Sunday Mail in South Australia, 57-year-old blind diner Ian Jolly was denied service at the Thai Spice restaurant a year ago because a staff member believed Jolly's guide dog, Nudge, was gay. According to testimony at an Equal Opportunity Tribunal conciliation hearing this week, a staff member thought he heard the diner's partner, Chris Lawrence, say that she wanted to bring a gay dog into the restaurant, which even displays a guide dog welcome sign at the entrance. A statement at the hearing said the restaurant owners genuinely believed that Nudge was an ordinary pet dog, which had been de-sexed to become a gay dog. Jolly told the newspaper that, "I just want to be like everybody else and be able to go out for dinner, to be left alone and just enjoy a meal." The restaurant agreed to provide Jolly with a written apology and pay him $1,500 in compensation. In addition, its staff will attend an equal opportunity education course.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 1st, 2010, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles. You can read the text of this week's News Wrap online at www.thiswayout.org.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Michelle Pleasant.
And I'm Sherry Lunn.
Un soiree palouse, next. This is Queer Voices.
And we're back. And coming up, the next big event is the Wonka Party. You may have seen ads in Outsmart or different posters around town, but we in the studio tonight have guests that represent Wonka. And
is this like the chocolate factory?
It's
Wonka and the...
That is the
no,
theme.
That's something else.
That's the theme.
That's the theme?
It's actually called the Un Soiree Palouse, which in French means the garden party. So this is kind of a reinvention of the old
garden party.
Old garden party.
We were just having that discussion, and I was telling our guests about the outfit I wore, because the old garden party was all about drag.
Well, and this
but
is
that's
kind
not
of,
what this one is.
It's about dressing up in costume and theme, and the theme is Wonka. So kind of taking your interpretation of Wonka. So there's many permutations for that. You mentioned guest in the studio we have. Please announce yourself.
I'm Tim Brookover. I'm president of the Houston GLBT Community Center, one of the beneficiaries.
And I'm Mary Beth Alsdorf, a volunteer with AssistHers, another beneficiary. And I am Timmy Martinez with Legacy Community Health Services, also a beneficiary of the event.
So three beneficiaries, all great causes. Tim Martinez, tell us about what people can expect at Wonka.
Well, we're looking forward to a fun and frolicking afternoon. The event will be at the Heights Theater up on 19th Street. It's an afternoon event. It goes from 3 to 7. We're going to have entertainment. We'll have beverages provided. It is open to everyone, gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgendered, straight. It's a community engagement event. And y'all were talking about costumes. We encourage people to dress in costume, but it's not required. In fact, I'm looking for an Oompa Loompa costume.
I say just get some self-tanner and go to town.
Well, I'm short enough. I'm short enough that I could, you know, pass for an Oompa Loompa. Yeah.
You can always get an orange jumpsuit down at the county jail.
Like I don't have one.
Now, this is the, which year of the Soiree Palouse?
This is the third year. The first year, the theme was Moulin Rouge.
Okay.
And the event was actually put together by Tim Brookover and Tom Baker, Mark Garcia, and Tommy Thompson, I believe. Mm-hmm. Y'all were the core group. And the theme was Moulin Rouge. And then last year, the theme was Wonderland, as in Alice. Wonderland. And this party has gained momentum over the years, and we're hoping that we'll have, you know, just as big of a turnout as they've had over the past 2 years.
What kind of turnout did you have last year?
Last year they estimated about 700 people.
Oh, great. Yes. Turnout.
Yes.
Were most of them in costume or half in costume? Or do you have any idea?
I believe most of them were in costume or some variation of an Alice in Wonderland character. And that's what we're hoping people will do this year. You know, Tim said he's thinking of dressing as Farouk Assault, the little girl from the original Willy Wonka, the one who ate the blueberries.
Yes. I want to be the blueberry girl.
There you go.
So we have Oompa Loompa. We have someone's going to be Wonka. I think I'm going to be Wonka.
I was going to say our honorary co-chair, Mr. Lavinka, should be a Wonka person.
Oh,
yes. And we do have some honorary co-chairs. One of them is Brian Lavinka. And then the other
one. He's co-host of Queer Voices.
Yes, he is.
We'll be here.
Yes, they drug me into this, and I'm like, oh, of course. You know me, I love a good cause and a good time and dressing up in costume. I mean,
well, it was important to have a radio personality.
Yes, I add, you know, I put the queer in Queer Voices, so I put the name out there.
And our other co-chair is Tammy Wallace. She is chief of staff for State Representative Ellen Cohen.
Right.
Well, the reason I asked about the costumes for people that are listening that, you know, don't feel like there's not you're the only one going to be coming dressed in some kind of a costume, that most people will have some variation of costume.
Right.
And that's important.
Right.
So they feel comfortable when they show up and get out of the car, walk down the street. They're not the only one dressed in a costume.
Exactly.
Now, Tim Brookover, can you talk about the historic garden party and what it was and kind of where this came from?
Sure. The garden party was an annual summertime party, which was really a drag party. And it was tremendous fun, held here in Montrose. It was, I believe, up until the last few years, it was an outdoor party.
Yes, it was.
And, of course, you know, hotter than the surface of the sun, particularly when you're dressed in drag and a wig and makeup. But still, great fun. You know, attracted lots of people from the community, and had a great theme every year. That was one of the most fun things about it. One year would be trailer trash, and one year would be...
That was the last one I went to.
That the last
trailer
one?
Trash.
Yes.
Yeah, in my red vinyl.
space aliens. I can't remember but they were always pretty clever. And it was a great opportunity for the community to come together and just really celebrate our diversity and our wackiness. Then the garden party, unfortunately, like a lot of events and some organizations in our community, faded away. A number of the organizers, you know, maybe had moved on, and in some cases were no longer with us, sadly. And then Mark and I had started talking about it. Wouldn't it be nice if, well, then the next thing you knew, we were in it, and we started organizing, and Mark recruited some other people, Tom included, and the result was the first party, Moulin Rouge, which was a great success, I think a bigger success than any of us really anticipated, which indicated that there was some real interest in the community for a party like this. That is also a fundraiser that supports vital community organizations, because all of our organizations need money.
Yeah. And it's so much better to earlier in the year, in the spring, like it is here in May. Because I remember those, the garden party, like July.
That's a very good point.
July outdoors.
It's still hot, but it's not, right, it's not 95
degrees.
And
if you're in drag, your makeup sort of wilts and runs off your face.
Well, I want to add that this is an indoor party.
Yes, it is.
Emphasize that.
Yes. Don't be frightened.
It may be, you know, warm outside, but we're going to be inside.
Right.
It's going to be air conditioning.
Air conditioning.
Yes.
And as Tim mentioned, it is a fundraiser. People do need to buy their tickets ahead of time.
Where can they buy them?
They can buy them online at soireepalouse.com. That's SOIREEPELOUSE.com.
Which is hard, yeah.
Yeah. There are some storefronts.
They're the normal storefronts,
right,
that we buy tickets in the community.
Right. And I do need to mention that we do have a minimum age limit on this. 21 years is the minimum age to gain admittance to the party.
Well, and the storefronts are also listed on the website,
right,
soireepalouse.com.
So, and there's posters all over the place.
Take a look, and there are posters all over the place, including at KPFT.
And you can go online and buy tickets there.
Right.
So. Yes, and you may also visit the Assist Hers website, and we'll have links to the storefront locations.
And what's that website?
That would be assisthers.org, spelled just like it sounds.
And you can go to the Community Center website as well, which is long, but it's HoustonGLBTCommunityCenter.org. So any of our websites, you can go and
a variety of
get a link
ticket purchase options.
Right.
You know, the one thing I really like about this event is how it is spread out over many, like the spectrum of our community. There's the gay community center, there's the lesbian portion, and there's also the HIV portion too. So it's kind of
right.
It reaches a large portion of our community.
Right. And I'm really hoping people show up, because our committee has been working very hard. In addition to representatives from each of the beneficiaries and our honorary co-chairs, you know, Tom Baker, Mark Garcia, Aaron Parks, Kevin Boyd, Orlando Balaceros, a whole group of people have put a lot of effort into this. And you may have seen little bands of us walking around with our Wonka t-shirts. like we're Wonkonians.
Little cult.
So if you see a Wonkonian, we probably have a ticket on us to sell.
Yes. So we're trying to push ticket sales early, and we have upcoming events where we'll be selling tickets. But, you know, just don't wait. It'll be a good time for a good cause. And do we want to talk a little bit about what the beneficiaries are for our listeners that may not know? Just a little short snippet about what each of you
do. Sure.
Go ahead.
Well, the Houston GLBT Community Center is home base for the lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender population in Houston and the metropolitan region and Southeast Texas. We provide a range of programming and also office space and meeting space for organizations in the community.
And Assist Hers is a 501c3 organization made up 100% volunteer, a diverse group of volunteers, and we service lesbian clients with chronic or terminal illnesses. And our goal is to help them live as normal a life as possible through care teams.
And Legacy Community Health Services is a federally qualified health center, originally known as Montrose Clinic. We changed our name when we merged with the Assistance Fund. And our core services has always been our HIV AIDS patients. We have several locations around town now. And I can tell you that those clients and staff members that are attending were really looking forward to our entertainment. We need to mention that real quick.
Yes. Well, also, I will let it go past with Legacy. Also, STD services,
right,
too.
Right, STD services.
Because that's something that we don't know. So we talk about HIV, and
right,
people don't know.
And primary health care services.
Oh, yeah. Because I've known that, I've sent a number of people who had
right
difficulty, and they didn't want to go other places. Go down there.
Well, you know, HIV kind of gets all the publicity,
right,
but there's other things. Tim, you mentioned the entertainment.
Yes.
Tell us more about that.
We are very fortunate that our entertainers are donating their services. One of them is the very well-known around town, and Coffee. She will be our mistress of ceremonies for the day.
And then, dominatrix of ceremonies.
And then an Aussie by the name of Jacinta, who lives in Austin. I think that's cute. She's an Aussie who lives in Austin. She's a recording artist known around the world. She is donating her services. She's coming into town to perform.
That's great.
And then Michael Kessler, the DJ, will be providing the dance music for all of us to get out and shake our groove thing.
Now, are we allowed to talk about the drawing before the event? Or please, there's a drawing that we have.
Yes, raffle tickets are available. And we will be raffling two cruises and a lovely Cartier watch.
Mm-hmm. And several other items.
So it's another way to make money, and it's, you know, a chance to win fabulous prizes.
Right. Oh, and about the tickets. When you go to the website, you'll see that we have general admission, which includes your beverages. And then we also have the VIP tickets, which includes premium beverages. And
extra perks.
And yes, extra perks to to thank you for your kindness.
And so all of the money that we're talking about goes to these three organizations. So if you haven't attended a Soiree Palouse, I highly encourage you to come out. I mean, it's a great time. And, you know, for me, I like to dress up and get all kind of crazy and, you know, have fun with my friends. And
I mean, if nothing else, you need to come out to see Brian dressed up.
That's right. That's right.
I'm going to be Wonka, I think. I'm working on getting a really cool Wonka. Crazy. I don't know if it's going to be the new Wonka or the old Wonka.
How about
a
hybrid?
I like the old Wonka best.
The traditional Wonka.
Yeah. You need just a big top hat.
Okay, so if you're out there listening, we're talking about the Wonka Soiree Palouse 3. This is the third annual. When is it, Tim?
It is May 16th at the Heights Theater.
Which is where?
That's on 19th
Street. It's on
19th Street.
In the Heights.
In the Heights. And it goes from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m.
And is there the website again?
Website is Soiree Palouse. That's SOIREEPLOUSE.com.
And if you are Facebook savvy, there's a group and a fan page out there for Soiree Palouse. So just do a search on that. You get all the information. Become a cool kid and be a fan of Soiree Palouse and Wonka. So anything else for our listeners?
No, we're just delighted to be participating and
absolutely
hope to see everyone out on Sunday the 16th.
So come out, have fun, and celebrate this and support the community.
And don't forget to buy your tickets ahead of time.
There you go.
There you go.
This is Queer Voices. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
That was called One Night Fling by Mike Trevino. He's actually a San Antonio artist. That was a private release brought to us by J.D. Doyle, who does Queer Music Heritage for us. And coming up on the next Queer Music Heritage, he's going to look at the 1920s and 30s craze in the nightclubs of openly gay performers. This was actually called the Pansy Craze. And he's going to have some rare music from some of those performers. This is actually stuff that he got off of 78s. Now, you know, J.D. is like the home of rare gay music. A lot of the stuff that we play, that he provides to us to play on this show, is actually off-label. You can't even buy it anywhere. However, there is more information, and some of this music is available on his website if you go to queermusicheritage.com.
Emmy Award-winning actor Dan Aykroyd will lead the way as the Grand Marshal of the 23rd Annual Houston Art Car Parade on Saturday, May 8th at 1 p.m. Close to 250 mobile masterpieces will travel along Allen Parkway, amazing and delighting spectators. The VIP party, the official party of the Houston Art Car Parade, offers the absolute best views, features a lunch from some of Houston's best restaurants, and even includes a visit from Grand Marshal Dan Aykroyd, making it the place to be on parade day. For tickets, call 713-926-6368 or visit orangeshow.org. You've been listening to 90.1 KPFT Houston.
This fall, KPFT will hold an election to seat delegates on the local station board. There will be separate but parallel elections for both listener and staff delegates to the Pacifica Foundation's five local station boards. That election may seem like a long way away, but it will be here before you know it. Why not consider participating in KPFT as a member of our board? Board delegates are elected to bring diverse grassroots voices from the community into the dialogue between the community and the station. Candidates are chosen in both listener and staff pools. To be a listener candidate, you can contribute at least $25 to a foundation radio station. If you are a KPFT volunteer and want to be considered as a staff candidate, you must complete 30 or more verifiable volunteer hours at a foundation radio station. Pacifica's principles inspire us to strive for diversity, and we encourage members of our diverse communities to consider being a part of this board. This is KPFT, Houston.
The Orange Show invites you to the Art Car Ball. The legend returns on Thursday, March 6th, from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. at the 2400 block of Munger Street. What better way to kick off the 2010 Art Car Parade weekend than with a night of live music, food, spirits, performance art, and fire-breathing cars? The Art Car Ball blurs the line between spectator and performers. Be sure you come in style for the costume contest. Live music from Southern Backtones, Flaming Hellcats, Herschel Berry, and The Natives, and Pearl is sure to help make the ball a night to remember. Tickets can be purchased in advance from your favorite Art Car artist or from www.orangeshow.org. Tickets can also be purchased at the door. You've been listening to 90.1 KPFT Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Walensky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
Well, we're back, and we have in our studio Jack and I and Tim Brookover with the Houston GLBT Community Center, and we're going to talk about a new group form, the Coming Out Group, that's been formed by the Community Center, and they meet on the first Monday, which is this Monday at 7 p.m., and also I want to talk about the scholarship fund that the Community Center. Tim,
great.
Welcome.
Thanks. Thank you very much, Jack and Jennifer. I'm always happy to be here, and appreciate the support and the chance to talk about the center. I have actually great news tonight about the coming out group. Tonight was our first meeting of the coming out group, which will meet monthly at the Community Center, 3400 Montrose, Suite 207. And the meeting, I got a report just before I came on, went very well. We had six people who showed up, which is five more than I would have expected. So I'm very excited, and they were all people who got a lot of meaning from the group and plan to come back, and are at different stages of the coming out process, including some people who are completely in the closet. Yeah. So we're very excited about that. This group will be held once a month to start. Depending on the response, we may increase the frequency, but once a month, as you said, on the first Monday of the month at 7 o'clock.
Now, coming out, we all know in the community what it's about, but this is more to support each individual who comes there in their process of coming out.
Sure.
Individually.
And different people are at different places in their coming out process. I know one of the gentlemen who contacted Burton Bagby Groves, who's the facilitator, it indicated that he's out in some parts of his life, but he's not out at work, and I think he's thinking about coming out at making that sort of last step. And so
that's a major step.
That's a major step, and so that's something that needs to be that he can talk about. And then there's one of our other participants is a school teacher, and she has a lot of other issues, and she was very
with HISD.
I'm not sure what district, but certainly it's a public school district, so you know they're all, I think, kind of in the same boat. So we're very excited at the success of this first meeting of the coming out group. The community center used to have a regular coming out group, actually multiple groups, when we were at the 803 Hawthorne location, and then with the move and you know things changed and we just didn't have it. And we've actually gotten a lot of requests recently from people who've contacted us and said, you know, hey, do you have a coming out group? And we thought, well, let's do it again. And looks like we're off to a very positive start.
And some of us forget, because we've been out for a while, of the process. And even though we all think it's easier nowadays than it was back in the day, but it isn't necessarily when you're dealing with your individual feelings.
Right. You're absolutely right. And Bert and I were talking about that on the phone just before I came on, that you're right, those of us who are very out and have been out for a number of years and are fortunate enough to be able to be out in all aspects of our life, including our jobs, we do forget. And, you know, perhaps some of us who are a little older, maybe forget what it was like in those early years when we were young and struggling.
And probably one of the things that the center has to offer, and I'm not taking this away from the Montrose Counseling Center, who does an excellent job on a lot of things, is
absolutely
that this is an organization that some people may have a little bit of trepidation going to a counseling or like a professional setting where this is...
Right.
And like I said, I'm not putting... This is great stuff.
Absolutely. We're the fourth largest city in the nation. This is a big city. There's plenty of need for multiple groups of different types. So there's certainly plenty of room for another coming out group in the community, and I think the fact that we had six people off the bat sort of demonstrated that. And for those out there who are listening and might be thinking, six people, that doesn't sound like a lot. Trust me, in our community, to get people to show up, particularly for the first event of any type, six people is a lot.
And along with that, you know, this is an opportunity for people to do so. And it is. A lot of people don't understand or that may be listening and maybe not necessarily directly from our community is that there are no protections, general protections for our employment.
Absolutely.
That maybe your individual company does, which you better check with HR, to protect gays and lesbians coming out. I know trans, there is nothing.
Right.
And so that's vitally important. And it's important to hear from other people.
Right, hear from the people. And one of the things that we're trying, and we think this will be successful, is the group, the coming out group at the center is open to everyone. Gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, questioning, male, female, all ages. Because our opinion is we all can learn from one another.
Right.
In our different stages of coming out, our different experiences. Now, down the road, if the group decides it wants to split into, you know, a male group or a female group or something like that, then that's something that we'll consider depending on what the group wants. But at this time, we like the idea of everybody being able to learn from everybody else.
Well, it's important to have a good facilitator, too.
Right.
And someone who can really work with the people.
Very strong facilitator in Burton Bagby Groves, who's one of the board members of the community center. And then Lisa Jackson, who's another board member, is assisting him. And before I came on, Burton reported that that worked really well. And because Lisa has brings some experiences to the table that supplements Burton's experience and expertise and training, and just apparently it was a very big success. And I have to say it does my heart good, because I know how difficult that we all know how difficult that process can be, and it's nice to know that we're providing a service that, you know, really is providing some meaningful help to people.
Well, it's important to have that facilitator, because I remember back when my early days when I first came out, sometimes you don't know how to put into words comfortably what you're feeling.
Right.
And if you have a facilitator there that understands that, can help and maybe say it for you, and then you can acknowledge it, and it takes time to bring it out of yourself.
Absolutely. And, you know, Burton and Lisa as well also have a wealth of information about the community, about the GLBT experience, about our history, which is very significant, and a lot of people, even people who are out, don't necessarily know. And then the resources that are available both in our community and, you know, nationally. There are many resources available.
And is there a charge for this?
No, free of charge.
Do you have to start at a certain time?
Drop in anytime. You can come every month, or if you want to come and you decide you want to take a break, or if you think once is enough for you, that's fine. We're completely comfortable with that. And yeah, it's absolutely free of charge. I mean, as always, at community center activities, we're happy to accept any donations, pass the hat for, you know, help us pay our rent. But it's a free, and, you know, we encourage everyone who is coming out, or maybe there are different stages of coming out, or maybe they think they might need a tune-up on coming out, to join Burton and Lisa and the group first Monday of the month at 7 o'clock at the Community Center at 3400 Montrose, Suite 207.
Now, I got this press release of events happening at the center, and one of them I read is that you received an award this past weekend.
Well, I did, Jack. Thank you for mentioning that. I also serve on the board of the Houston Transgender Unity Committee, which is the consortium group for the many vital transgender, transsexual groups in the metropolitan area. I'm the scholarship chair. We present the Peggy Rudd Transgender Scholarship every year. This is our fifth year. And we also give awards at our Unity Banquet, which was held last Saturday at the Sheraton Brook Hollow. It's a fantastic event. If you haven't been, please think about coming next year. It's great fun. And it's for a great cause, scholarships for transgender-identified students pursuing higher education. But I was honored to receive the Champion Award, which is given to the non-transgender individual who has worked for the transgender community. There's an individual award, and then there's also a Champion Award for organization, which this year was awarded to Hatch, the youth group. It's a program of the Montrose Counseling Center, specifically for the new subgroup for transgender-identified young people, which is led by Josephine Titsworth, the fantastic advocate. And so Hatch was very deserving of that award, because that's, as Josephine has told me, that's a group that's really made a difference in the lives of some transgender youth.
Oh, yes. And that's always the most difficult, is the young ones.
Absolutely.
You know, many trans people like myself, you know, we came out later on in life, but the kids are becoming even more and more aware at earlier and earlier ages, and so it's important for that. So
absolutely,
they did good work, and it was you were well deserved for the award.
Well, thank you, Jennifer. I appreciate it, and I was very honored. And I've as I said in my very brief remarks, I mean, I really wanted to honor three of the fantastic community leaders who brought me into the transgender community, the late Brenda Thomas, the former executive director of the Unity Committee, and Phyllis Randolph Fry, who needs no introduction, and Lily Roddy, the former chair of the Unity Committee, and many people know as the astrologer who contributes a column to Outsmart every month. But and then through them, I've made so many other friends and allies in that community, and I hope I can continue to serve as a bridge between the GLB parts of the community and the transgender community, because as I said on Saturday, I think we're going to be strongest as a community when we work together.
So that award isn't saying we don't need your help anymore.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's...
We're not putting you out to pasture. Right?
I hope not anyway.
No, that's the Lifetime Achievement Award, which I got 3 years ago, and I said, I guess I'm dead now.
And we're still not letting her go, so...
Oh, and... but there was some... Y'all have your own scholarship program, scholarship fund at the community center. Tell me about that.
This year, in June, we will award the very first John Lawrence and Tyrone Garner Scholarship of the Houston GLBT Community Center. It's a scholarship fund that the center established in honor of John Lawrence and Tyrone Garner, who were the co-petitioners in the Lawrence versus Texas case, which you'll remember was the landmark case before the Supreme Court that overturned anti-gay sodomy laws in the nation.
Decriminalized our life.
Absolutely. I was going to say changed everything. And John Lawrence and the late Tyrone Garner were from Houston, and the case started in Houston and worked its way through the system and ended up in the Supreme Court. So the Community Center established this scholarship a couple of years ago, and this year we are going to award our first scholarship at an event in June, which we're still planning. Historically, we've had an event celebrating the day of the Supreme Court decision on June 26th. But June 26th this year happens to be the same day as the Pride Parade, so we're choosing another date, and we haven't quite set that yet. But we'll award the scholarship at that date. The deadline is May 14th. Applicants are high school seniors. We're hoping to award it to a high school senior. And the application and more information is available on the website, HoustonGLVTCommunityCenter.org.
Okay, a couple questions. Do they have to come from the Houston area?
It's open to high school students in Texas.
Okay.
Do they have to be GLBT?
Yes.
Okay.
GLB or T. And one of the qualifications is we're looking for students who have demonstrated some type of activism or community service. I mean, obviously, a high school senior is not going to, become executive director of the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force or something like that, but has shown some interest, some facility at community organizing, as the president is known.
Maybe
known
forming a group, a GLBT group within their high school.
Forming a GSA or advocating for equal rights for all. Because we think that's important. I mean, John Lawrence and Tyrone Garner, very private, quiet men, took a stand, when they were arrested for consensual sex. And they didn't have to. They could have just...
Pleaded it out
and gone away and lived their lives. And they're not necessarily... And John... I've been privileged to talk to John about this several times. That would have been the easier route for them personally, but John and Tyrone felt it was important to take a stand. And sometimes, heroes come from unexpected places, and these two gentlemen certainly fit that mold. So, we thought it was important to identify students that have some interest in really making a difference. And, of course, academic qualifications and financial need are part of that as well.
Well, before we have to close, you've got to tell me, what about Queer Bingo?
Thank you, Jennifer. Queer Bingo is back, baby. The first Queer Bingo, which has been rebranded, First Saturday Queer Bingo, to make it clear
when it is.
It's on the first Saturday of the month. Will be Saturday, June 5th. And our new venue is the second floor private room at One's a Meal Restaurant on Westheimer near Montrose. The folks at One's a Meal have been incredibly welcoming and gracious and excited to have us there. It will be from 4 to 6. We're moving the time a little earlier because we think people would like to come a little earlier, and then they'll still have, they can play bingo, maybe, you know, win some games, have fun, and then they still have their whole Saturday night to do whatever people do on Saturday night.
Is that venue large enough? Because there were pretty big crowds.
We're hoping so. Now, it may, you know, we may outgrow it, and of course,
and that would be a problem. That would be a good problem.
We may outgrow it quickly, and that would be a good problem to have. Because you're right. When we were at 1415 California, toward the last few games we had, it was getting snug.
It was getting fun. It really was fun. It's good. I'm glad to hear it's back. Well, I've been waiting for it.
Thanks for asking.
Give us your website again.
The website is Houston www.HoustonGLBTCommunityCenter.org. There's information about Queer Bingo. There's information about the John Lawrence and Tyrone Garner Scholarship Fund and all kinds of other information as
well.
And
the Out Group. Coming Out Group.
Our other programs, you can also sign up to be on a list to, you know, get regular information. We're rebuilding, bringing on new programs, working with new volunteers. It's very exciting.
Thank you. We've been talking with Tim Brookover, the president of the Houston GLBT Community Center. Thank you very much. And this is Queer Voices.
Better than chocolate, better than a hug, better than kittens and other mushy stuff. Is better than ice cream on a July day. Better than the Detroit Lions finally winning a game. I think you should know I'm talking about public radio. Public radio. Better than finding comfortable footwear. Better than scratching and itch down there. Is better than bald guys suddenly growing. And J-Lo and sexy underwear. Now you know I'm talking about public radio. But send out some dope public radio. Because they give you great shows, public radio. This is what you hear. So let me make this clear. Public radio. Send out some dope. Public radio. Because they give you great shows. Public radio.
That was Jamie Anderson and a song called Public Radio from the album Better Than Chocolate that was released in, this year. And actually a reminder that we're going to be doing some fundraising here at KPFT in just a couple of weeks. This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jennifer Renee.
And Summer Iman.
Yes, and we're here. We're with Chris Rivera, actor, writer of Unhinged Productions, production of
Uncivil Unions.
See, good, cued right in there.
Yeah,
great.
It's not my first rodeo.
Well, tell us about the Uncivil Unions.
Oh, Uncivil Unions specifically.
Yeah. Well, the Unhinged Productions. We'll get to all of it.
Okay, yeah, we'll cover it all. A little background on Unhinged. I'm just hired on as an actor, but I used to be on the board and help artistically. It is a over 10-year-old GLBT theater company out there to create theater for the GLBT community. And this show specifically is definitely for the GLBT community of Houston. There's been 8 of us that joined up late last year and have been writing, conceiving, and figuring out how to do a show on gay marriage in America, but not just America, but specifically for Houston natives.
Okay, now, is this a drama, or is it humor?
It's everything. It's funny, it's dramatic, it's hilarious, it's big, it's satire, it's bright, it's multimedia, there's video, it's everything.
Well, with that, we probably need to know where you get tickets.
Yes. Well, tickets are available at comeunhinged.com. And you can also call 832-250-7786.
Okay. We'll mention that again before we're finished. But, all right, a little bit about the show itself.
Absolutely. Well, instead of trying to come up with a plot and, like, a regular storyline that we think about.
Oh, yeah. What a boring. Come up with a plot.
Well, concept.
It has a story.
Well, it's also, as writers, how do we really do that? We take turns, passing back and forth.
Is it the story curve?
There are reoccurring characters and reoccurring storylines, but it's a lot of different stories.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. So there's
a bunch of interweaving plots, or not even that necessarily?
Some. Okay. We have a few different kind of worlds. There is an interweaving plot of us as writers in the show, kind of a la Moses Kaufman, Laramie Project, but funnier. Kind of a Syria comic sitcom-y thing. There's this world of, like, spirits, and there's a world of TV, a world of satire that we're kind of...
Sounds like Saturday Night Live.
Exactly. It's a little bit Saturday Night Live, a little bit Moses Kaufman. It's
a lot of satire in it?
Absolutely. A lot of satire, but also a lot of heart. I mean, because satire is really fun and appealing and intellectually stimulating, but there is a lot of heart in the show, too.
Well, a good satire has to have some heart to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's all based, it's that little twist that they get in there. Well, what stimulated y'all to do this one particularly?
Joe Angel Babb is the new artistic director of Unhinged.
Okay.
He joined this season, and he conceived of a season of a show to go along with their last show, which was... oh, great. Now I don't remember the last shot. Most Fabulous Story Ever Told by Paul Rudnick.
Yes.
So he was really moved by the gay marriage debate. And he wanted to do a process where we were creating something specifically for the community. For years, Unhinged has been about the GLBT community in Houston. But this show really is about... we've done interviews, there's real people who are made characters and their names have been changed for the show. And that's really where it came from. It's all his brainchild, and he's the director and conceiver.
So you started out with real stories.
Yeah, absolutely.
And other than changing the names, there's a lot of humor in real life.
Oh, absolutely. We just started with real stories. There's some fun concepts. But we did, I mean, a lot of it's based on ourselves, our own experiences, interviews that we did with people in the community. But all that sounds so serious. It's a lot of fun, and it's bright and colorful, and you should see it.
So I've heard that Unhinged in general is a fairly artistic group, where they kind of go for more edgy things. Is this true?
I would say so. I mean, I think that they're a little bit daring than a lot of theater companies out there and a lot of the larger theater companies. And, yeah, there's a little bit of pushing the envelope. This one, I think that, you know, always when you do satire, somebody's getting bit.
Would you ever think that the Unhinged Productions would take on the Corpus Christi play, the one that Tarleton State University
did?
Oh, really?
I think they did a couple seasons ago. I wasn't in town. What's funny is that no one protested. Every other place got protested, but not Houston, Texas.
Well,
I know. Every other place that does that show gets co-tested with Corpus Christi.
Well, that just shows you... it doesn't show you. It tells you something about the culture of Houston.
Yeah, we are a blue city in a red state.
Or we're already forsaken.
Well, we actually elected a
gay mayor.
Yes.
And all that is also in the show, that we're in a different climate than the rest of Texas. If this was a show about America or Texas, it would be very different than this show, because this is a real Houston reaction.
Now, if I go see it, mm-hmm. when I go see it, not yes. if, when I go see it, will I recognize some people in there? Will I recognize a story that I've heard? Or
you might recognize some people who are prominent in the community, but we've changed names. You specifically might. Just saying. I'll keep that a mystery. And of course you'll see me.
Well, I'm a big
star. I don't know if you know that.
Well, it's worth going to see if you recognize your friends and family.
It is. It's true. There is one very popular hairstylist / businessman that a lot of people know. Can't say his name. And it's changed for the show. And there is a trans woman that some people know. One character. There's a character that's based off three people, and she's one of them.
Oh, okay.
But mum's the word on who
mum's
she actually
the word?
Is.
Oh. Yeah.
And me. I'm huge. I was Hedwig. I like won Best Actor in a Musical for Hedwig. I'm huge. People know me. Chris Rivera. Look me up.
All right.
Oh, sorry. I'm supposed to be plugging the show,
I'll get out my iPad. I'll go online and look you up real quickly just to make sure.
I thought you did the prep for this. No, you didn't know. It's fine.
Well, the one thing about it, what other productions specifically are coming up with Unhinged after this one?
Well, summer is typically the time theaters kind of go to sleep for a couple months, and they announce a new season. So it'll be on the website, but the new season is being selected right now, along with most theaters in town.
Oh, okay.
Do you know why that is? Why summer is the time for the sleeping of the theater?
I don't know. It's tradition. There's like summer stock that's done in larger cities, where people kind of move to different cities to do shows. It's just an off season time. I guess people leave the city. I mean, the Alley Theater does a certain thing during the summer. They do summer chills. Everyone does something different during the summer. Old theater tradition.
Doesn't it go back to the time in New York when they didn't have air conditioning, and so it was so hot in the city that the theater crews, troops all traveled to the hinterlands?
I'm going to say yes, because that makes me sound intelligent.
However,
I did my research.
Nice.
However, if it was to escape the heat, then Houston would never have a theater season.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, the only reason, the first refrigerated, before air conditioning, refrigerated building was the old music hall. Back then, for a Democratic convention, I think 1948 or something like that. That I'm not sure of. But they had to do their whole rush deal so we'd mm-hmm. have it. Unhinged has been around for how long?
Just over 10 years, I think. I think this is their 11th season.
Do you know anything about its history and its startup?
I do know that it was... I don't want to get it wrong. I somebody important, and I don't want to name their name just in case I'm wrong at who it is, encouraged the first artistic director to create the theater because theaters in Houston were shying away from shows with GLBT content. And there were a lot of great shows out there, but maybe because the climate was a little bit more conservative then, these stories weren't being told. And they weren't, and if they were, maybe they weren't being told with the heart that they should have been.
Well, I like the name. Unhinged sort of tells it all.
Yeah.
As far as the productions are concerned. And speaking directly about you, what other productions have you been in? After all, you are the star, right?
I am. Well, I'm one of the stars. There's eight of us. I happen to be here, but that is
We're
no way it says that I'm the most
stars.
Talented or interesting at all. I'm just the biggest ham.
You're just outspoken.
I'm just outspoken. I can just chuck for a while. I was doing film. For 2 years before last January. So coming back into town, I did Stage Beauty at Mildred's Umbrella. I did a little kid show for Tots. I did a show called Scorch, and I did Hedwig with Unhinged. And then I took a little break to focus on just teaching acting for a while. And then this is my first full production in about 6 months.
Now, again, give us the information on how to get tickets and the like.
Well, the show is at Frenetic Theater, which is on 5102 Navigation Boulevard, Houston, Texas, 77011. Right down the street from the original Lymphos. You know where that is?
Yeah, sure do.
Now, again, the tickets are comeunhinged.com is the website. The phone number is 832-250-7786. And it plays pretty much every weekend in May. Friday the 7th, 14th, 21st, and 28th at 8. Saturday the 8th, 15th, 22nd, and 29th at 8. Sunday the 23rd and 30th at 7:30. And one special Monday night showing on May 24th also at 7:30.
Why one special one?
One special Monday?
Yeah.
Well, okay, again with theater tradition. Monday is typically equity night off for Actors Union.
Right.
It's kind of become a tradition with some of the indie theaters to do a Monday night performance so that people involved with larger productions at that level.
Oh, have a chance to come see
exactly.
The show.
So if you're running,
what an excellent idea.
So if you're running that big, if you're in a big show, you can also come see ours. So see ours, even if you're doing a show somewhere else. See us.
So
and I'll see you.
So the show is an ensemble of stories with some consistent themes running through there.
Yeah, I mean, just to give you some ideas on specificity with it. There's a game show called Who Wants to Get Married? And the contestants are two first cousins, a 90-year-old and his 20-something-year-old nurse, and two gay men.
Ah.
And I won't tell you who wins. there is another sketch about... the stories of the writers themselves, you really get into one of the writers' personal relationship, which is kind of based on mine, kind of fictitious. I wrote that part. But a couple who one of them is a writer for the show, really believes in gay marriage, and the other one kind of feels it means losing our identity, losing that the GLBT community shouldn't have marriage. All viewpoints on the issue are there.
So it's not going to be almost like propaganda in that sense.
Absolutely. I mean, we have anti-gay marriage, for gay marriage, people who aren't sure, people of all ages. It's all different stories. I mean, there's humorous looks at the situation, but it's definitely not an angry in your face piece. It has a lot of joy, a lot of story, and a lot of heart.
Is polyamory addressed in this play at all, or no?
I'm trying to remember. I'm sure we do have a polyamorous scene.
Would you explain just to the people out there what that is?
Having more than one marriage partner. Right.
Or not necessarily a marriage partner, but having more than one partner in a...
The three of us are a couple.
Yes.
As if all three of us were dating. Then the three of us would be a couple, right?
Yeah, you quite sad to women on your own.
Well, that'd cover all of it. Well, we'd have to have a bi somewhere.
I think we do have some bi. We have some gay. We have some trans. We have Native American Two Spirits.
Oh,
if you're familiar with that concept.
Yes.
It's a very beautiful piece on there. I'm kind of biased. I had a lot to do with that one too. But we have a lot. We have a lot. I don't know if we have polyamorous. To be honest, that might have been something we overlooked. I'm sorry, all you polyamorous people out there.
We're talking with Chris Rivera, actor, writer of Unhinged Productions' production of Uncivil Union. And if you couldn't tell, it sounds like a really exciting outfit. Very much like, just when your description, it sounds like a Saturday Night Live.
Absolutely.
About Houston, Texas, gay community, GLBT community.
Yeah, and also some beautiful pieces. There's some beautiful, lovely, joyful pieces as well as the satire.
Could you mention, without spoiling too much of the show, some things that are specifically Houston? Like, how are you tying Houston culture, Houston identity into this?
Well, like I said before, a lot of the interviews happen in Houston. There's specifically one piece that comes to mind when you ask the question that because there are interviews, you see those interviewees, the interviewed people being represented on the stage by actors. And, two of them, there's a lesbian and a gay man who talk about dating in Houston and what that's like for gay men specifically and lesbians specifically, where to find people. There's a lot about Texas laws.
In what respect?
Oh, there's different... I mean... Blah, blah. Sorry, I got a little tongue-tied there. There's a lot of discussion on what's legal and what's not because a lot of people don't know. A lot of people don't really know exactly what the laws are and what rights we do have and don't have. And so specifically, what the situation is in Texas.
So you're saying is that people should come to the show for a entertaining legal tutorial.
No, I mean, it's a really fun night. If you know where you feel about the issues, if you don't know where you feel on the issues, or if you just want to have a good time, It's a really joyful, beautiful piece. And I think, you know, it Unhinged is for a GLBT and allies audience. And we say that early on. We're not expecting to get a lot of right-wingers in there and change a lot of people's minds. But I think we do, I think everyone will find something to feel passionate about, as well as have a really great time and laugh a lot. And because it's so many short vignettes and it changes constantly, if you don't like part of the show in 2 minutes, it'll be something completely different.
Well, that's always good.
Exactly.
Well, anybody that watches Saturday Night Live knows that.
Exactly. One sketch bomb, don't worry, the next one will be good. It has nothing to do with it.
Go ahead.
I'm saying it's a little bit of the time of, it's indicative of the age this now with ADHD theater.
It is very, I mean, it is about the climate right now. I mean, we've been writing it over the last 6 months, so.
And any particular vignette that's your favorite?
Okay, so I wrote a lot. I have I studied with Lanford Wilson writing, so I feel bad. I'm going to pick one that's not mine, that I didn't write, that I think is really funny. I do think the game show is really funny. I helped write one, but it wasn't really written by me, about, let's just say, two very big figures in the gay community long ago are reincarnated, and they are being judged by one of the kids from Jersey Shore because he got his own reality TV show like Judge Judy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
that sounds,
he's Judge DJ JC.
Yep.
Yo, that's me in case you didn't notice.
Yes.
Yeah, that'll be me. Okay. That'll be my voice.
Give us the information on the tickets one more time.
It is www.comeunhinged.com or call 832-250-7786.
Chris Rivera, thank you so much for Unhinged Productions.
Thank you.
If you get a chance, get you a ticket and go see Uncivil Unions. This is Queer Voices.
There was another demonstration in Washington, D.C. to protest President Barack Obama's failure to push for repeal this year of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Six more activists chained themselves to the White House fence and were arrested on May 2nd. And former Democratic National Committee Chair and Vermont Governor Howard Dean made an unexpected appearance to support the action.
This is a community that's demonstrated their courage, they've given their lives, and now it's time to allow them to say who they are.
We'll have more on this story next time on This Way Out. A trans mother and child reunion is only emotion away. Later in the program. While Fred God Hates Fags Phelps is preparing to defend his pickets at the funerals of service members before the U.S. Supreme Court, his estranged son Nate is speaking out about life inside the family cult.
If people didn't do, either the kids or our mother didn't do what he required, he would turn violent quickly.
The Topeka, Kansas-based Westboro Baptist Church, so infamous for its venomous homophobia and harassment, has no actual connection to any formal Baptist entity, and it has virtually no members outside Phelps' own captive brood.
I had such a bad relationship with him growing up, and leaving that situation on my 18th birthday because I didn't feel like I had a choice if I was going to survive.
Out of 13 siblings, Nate Phelps is one of only three who've managed to get away permanently. As their three-part conversation nears an end, This Way Out correspondent Heather Kitching wonders why.
Yeah.
sound like a dumb question, but why do you think the other ones, and your mom for that matter, never did leave, or haven't broken away permanently at least?
We talked earlier about that sense that God's going to punish you.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got all of this belief system in your head that you grew up with from infancy that says that keeps you attached there. And if you do leave, then you're ostracized, so you're cut off from everything that you know or have known, you know, your support system and your family. And I think at some point you know, that they came to embrace the theology and, you know, became theirs.
Mm-hmm.
in a very practical sense.
Now, what has this done for your spirituality? Do you still consider yourself a Christian?
I struggled with the question for years, and just recently have finally decided that I just don't believe it anymore.
So you don't believe in a God at all, or you don't believe in the Christian belief system, or?
Yeah, I just don't think that there's any empirical evidence or any way to prove that a God exists out there. And for all of the suffering and the anguish that my exposure to Christianity has caused, I just it doesn't work for me.
So what made you decide to start speaking publicly?
Well, you know, it all depends on the day you ask that question, Heather. I mean, honestly, there's times when I think that there's a bit of a revenge element to it, if I'm honest about it. But I just think that, you know, here's this situation where my family's doing something that I find abhorrent. And I have this opportunity to talk about it and try to explain and give people a little more clarity about what the situation really is and who these people really are. And I don't think it's right for me to stay quiet about it.
Mm-hmm. You were brought up in a family with a father that preached that gay people were basically the root of all evil. And here we are talking right now. You don't appear to have any issues with gay people. Is there anything residual from that experience that stays with you? I mean, no discomfort at all with gay, lesbian, bi, trans people?
No discomfort at all. What it came down to for me, Heather, is that when I really looked at the basis for believing what I believed about gays, it all went back to the Bible. And if I reject that as a source of information, I've got no justification for treating that group of people any different than any other group of people.
So you're working on a book, as I understand it.
Well, yeah. let's just say I've done a lot of writing, and there's more than enough there to fill a book from everything I've heard about, you know, how long those kind of nonfiction books are.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually had worked with a ghostwriter a few years back out of L.A., and we put together a proposal and almost got picked up by HarperCollins, but they ultimately said they couldn't see a big enough market.
Hmm.
So they pulled back. So it's there. It's ready to be put out there, but we've just got to find a publisher.
Our thanks to Heather Kitching in Vancouver, B.C. for sharing that interview with us. You can find out more about Nate Phelps, his unpublished book, and his activities on behalf of people who've been damaged by Christian fundamentalism at his website, www.natephelps.com.
You're listening to This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine, brought to you by you. Your charitable donations keep this program on the air. We've produced some special CDs to say thank you to our supporters, featuring queer history, reviews of LGBT music, and behind-the-scenes looks at relevant movies and TV shows. You can also now get CDs of our regular program by subscription, and be sure you never miss a week of This Way Out. For all the details, please visit our website at thiswayout.org.
A trans woman talks about her experiences becoming not only a woman, but a mother, and her son talks about how she's done. Our Taryn James delivers the story.
It never ceases to amaze me that the most wonderful people in my life are met in the most prosaic circumstances. I never would have imagined that when I met the person you're about to meet, I would discover one of the strongest and most remarkable women I have ever known. Out of courtesy and protection, her name is being withheld for the purposes of this interview, so I'll let her introduce herself.
I can say, I'm a proud parent of one son. He is my son and I am his mother. He calls me Mom. So my name is Mom.
Mom is a post-operative transsexual woman who has agreed to talk to me about what it was like to transition not only into womanhood, but motherhood as well. Here is how her story began.
Once upon a time, I was having premarital sex with this gal, and she conceived of a child, and I begged and pleaded that she not kill him. So she brought that one to term. I guess that's just the way, you know, the generation that we came out of. And so that would be my exacting comment on the situation, and I would pass the polygraph with that one.
The other woman in this story, who is the bio mom for this woman's son, will be referred to in this piece as the other parent, or...
I have a better term for it, egg donor.
Mom's story would not be complete, however, without hearing from the person who bestows that title of mom on this woman. For the purposes of this interview, he will be called son. Here's what he had to say about having a mom that was perhaps a little different than the other kids in the neighborhood.
Yeah, it really didn't faze me. I mean, other people would ask me, is there a problem? Do you need understanding? Do you need this? Do you need that? No, it was never the case. I never needed anything more than, well, she's my mom, she loves me, and there's nothing more to it, so I don't care.
All parents and children go through tough times and periods of growth together and apart. Mom reflects a little about those times.
When I was no longer living at my son's address, and there was a season where I wasn't at his address, I had to go away, and when I'd come back, there were times when I let myself go. I looked kind of manly, if you will. This gave off an androgynous impression, and the kids tore my son apart in that neighborhood. He had to relocate, because that's just the way it is. I think that one, were I paying close enough attention, or maybe this is just the point where I learned the lesson, is that I could have made it better for him if I just looked in the mirror, and it almost seems as though how I presented myself had a pejorative effect and set him up for further complications. When that lesson became crystal clear to me, it began to give me perspective. He wanted to run ahead and get into fights and stuff, almost throwing himself into conflict on my behalf. I almost had to tell him, you know, we can't die on this hill. Let's go ahead and relocate, and then we're going to start over with new rules. I'll handle my end, and it took a while, and we found the equilibrium. And it's important to find that equilibrium. Parents and children in my specific situation, they have maybe a few more rules to the road, but it's doable. It is.
Despite difficulties, Son is always quick to say that Mom is too hard on herself and focuses on the good aspects of their relationship.
She was always there. Whenever I had a problem, whenever I wanted to have someone to talk to, whenever I just wanted to blow off steam and be angry at other people, I could always talk to her. She'd put things in perspective. She'd say, you know, well, you know, that does suck, but, you know, you need to get up and do something about it, otherwise they're going to continue to trample on you or something like that, you know.
If someone was to think to themselves, hearing what I'm saying is going, wow, the boy had to probably put up with a lot. With all those changes and all that stuff, and then this is how he was reacting to it. And that must have been awful for him. You know, at first I think maybe it was. And it's just like, well, then maybe, you know, this is a psychological problem, and actually he's been put in a hard place, and I'm just putting a positive spin on it. And I was thinking to myself, is there any place on this world where it's especially easy enough and utopia is being had? Or can we always cherry pick and kind of look at every situation as being, because you can find fault with it, you can deconstruct and cause it to be an issue that you bring up with someone else. It's like, I have to tell you, I admire how far my son came with this. He's not freaked out on drugs. He's taking care of business right now. And what? He's 20 years of age, and I have less complaints than most of my contemporaries. So
the question of difficulty may arise from spectators saying that this environment was not good for a child.
Oh, well, if they want to talk about not an environment for child, well, then they should look at my other parent, I'm going to have to say.
There's been much accounting from both mom and son that the other parent, or egg donor, was absent through much of son's life, choosing the company of others, or spiraling into mental instability, so much as to be put on suicide watch. So mom stepped in.
To be a mama bear? To be a mama bear, you've got to be ready. You're on a constant vigil. When they're really young, you let them know that you're not only acknowledging them, but you are seeing them. Motherhood means that nothing is going to stop you from doing the best for your kids. You're activating goodness in someone who's just sprouting into the world. There's nothing more precious than that. I hope I can rally someone else to such greatness.
My mother taught me that it is a very major sacrifice to have children, and that a lot of people today believe that children are a nuisance of some sort, when actually it is the most wonderful gift you could ever possibly have. I mean, that is a part of you and the other person whom you love, and that is more major and more intense than anything else on the entire planet which I can think of.
Through all the challenges, mom has kept a clear perspective throughout about the realities of her situation. What has the experience of transitioning into a mother given her?
For me, out of not only just consideration, but a healthy respect of the consequences, that I'll not be acknowledged as a woman by folks who know me, but as I grew to be more confident that I would be able to understand my place in the scheme of things, I also began to trust those times when I was satisfied that I could, by release, not out of replacement, but by release, allow the developments to happen, and they do. A lot of folks are fearful that it cannot happen. That fear shapes your perspective. That is my answer.
You know, I can't thank my lucky stars that she was my other parent enough, because I wouldn't be the person which I am today, and I wouldn't be how I am or who I am if it wasn't for my mom.
This has been a brief look at the complexities of the modern family. May it influence our own lives in the greater LGBT family. For This Way Out, I'm Taryn James. And for my mother and all those others out there, I love you.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the International Lesbian and Gay Radio Magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, Michelle Pleasant, Heather Kitching, Lucia Chappell, and Taryn James contributed program material. Thanks also to Steve Fry. R.E.M. sang Losing My Religion, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out is supported by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and by our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can support our work, listen to our podcast.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Well, we'd like to thank our guests tonight.
Oh, yes. We had in the first segment John Wright from the Dallas Voice, and we were talking about their new online edition. And then we talked about the Soiree Palouse, which is the latest version of the Garden Party, which is what that is. And we talked with Tim Martinez and LaVita Marx. And then we talked with Tim Brookover about the GLBT Community Center's coming out group facilitated by Burton Bagby Gross. And then we talked with Chris Rivera
actor, writer of Unhinged Productions, production of Uncivil Unions.
And let's not forget, we talked about the Art Car Parade.
Yes, we did. That was in that very first segment.
Which is going to be this Saturday, and it's one of Houston's most unique parades. And there was a really nice write-up about the fundraiser that they do before the Art Car Parade in Sunday's Chronicle, about how they used to do it in a garage. Just what a, you know, a parking garage.
Oh,
what,
yes.
What a great thing. We've got some stuff coming up in the next couple of weeks. The next 3 weeks, we're going to be fundraising, so please stay tuned.
And next week, we're going, in the first two segments, we're going to have a frank discussion about the trans community and the GLBT community, and about the unsocial nature of us getting along.
And I direct you to our webpage, queervoices.org, because there you can join our, there's buttons there that you can join our Facebook, our Twitter, and the iTunes, where you can listen to this show if you miss parts of it.
And this is Queer Voices. Good night.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 9 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Brian Levinka, Jennifer Renee, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, Summer Iman, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning, starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston, a Pacifica Foundation station. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Come and celebrate spring with the Discovery Green Thursday Concert Series, co-sponsored by 90.1 KPFT FM. The spring season features free concerts showcasing outstanding regional performers at Discovery Green every Thursday, starting May 6th and running through June 24th.
Discovery Green is Houston's spot to picnic on the grass, dance on the patio, and watch the sunset over the gorgeous downtown skyline while a cool breeze blows over the pond.
Bring your family, meet your friends, take your office on an outing, or disconnect the neighborhood kids from their video games and bring them down to Discovery Green. Let them hear what a real rock band sounds like. And if they like Guitar Hero, they'll enjoy the real heroes of guitar. The series performers include C.J. Chenier, Soul Hat, Sarah Hickman, Joe King Carrasco, Los Carnales, Buxton, and Mike Stinson. Most street parking is free starting at 6 p.m. Showtime starts at 6:30 p.m., so don't be late. Everyone is welcome. Bring your picnic blankets
and the lawn chairs.
But leave your glass containers and alcohol at home.
Don't worry. Food, wine, and beer are all available at the Lake House Restaurant in the park.
For more information, visit kpft.org. For more information, visit kpft.org. KPFT Houston. Real Film presents a screening of The Fire Next Time, directed by Patrice O'Neill, sponsored by KPFT Radio. The film follows a deeply divided group of Montana citizens caught in a web of conflict over growth, the environment, and the power of talk radio. It's a story with eerie relevance to today's headlines. So come out and join us Saturday, May 8th, 2010, at the Houston Community College Spring Branch Campus for the Performing Arts Theater at 1010 West Sam Houston Parkway North, Houston, Texas, 77043. The ticket price includes free refreshments.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.